Hello, hello, and welcome back, or welcome to the Life Without Limits podcast. Fired up for today's guest as we continue on in season three, talking to a bunch of people who are seeking to be the best version of themselves. And this is straight college football in this episode. Now, there's a lot of college football news that is literally happening. Arizona just hired Kevin Sumlin, a huge hire, former Texas A&M coach. And it's pretty interesting because today is MLK Day, and he is the first African-American head coach in Arizona football history. So amazing things happening in the game. There's also a lot of drama happening in the game, right? Coaches hired, coaches fired, huge crazy contract, $75 million to the new head coach of Texas A&M, Jimbo Fisher, buyouts that are ridiculous, but there's also some stories that we very rarely hear. And that is what today is all about. His name is Brian Hamilton. You've probably never heard of him before, but he is one of the 132 offensive line coaches in college football. His story is unique. He didn't play in the NFL, doesn't have a famous dad in the coaching profession. He's just grinded his way to where he is today. He began as a high school phys ed coach and then continued on as a teacher. And then was a head coach in high school football, winning championship after championship for 12 years. Then at 40 years old, he's faced with a quote, "Your life plan sounds like the opposite of every game plan I've ever heard you formulate." He was told that by a guy named Tony Franklin, one of the most famous offensive coordinators in major college football. And Brian had been a coach who had always been very unique. He had gone for two. He basically eliminated special teams from his game plan. Just one of those outside-the-box thinkers you hear about randomly every 3 or 4 years. There's a great expose somewhere about a coach who thinks like this. That was Brian. He jumps at 40 years old from high school, a very consistent, safe job with a family and kids, to go coach at Cal, a place he had bought tickets throughout the majority of his life because he was always a fan of the Bears. From there, he moved on to Murray State, population 19,000. And now he's coaching offensive line there. He's got a great story. He literally performed a wedding ceremony for one of his offensive linemen a year ago, went crazy on ESPN and basically went viral. But he's also really developed this team. What I love about this story is that right now we hear so many stories in college football, in this profession, about big names, people getting hired, like I referenced, or getting fired, but very rarely are we taken inside what the majority of coaches go through, right? It's like acting. We don't really hear about the actors that are just doing it to have a consistent job. We hear about the stars that thrive or plummet. Same thing in coaching. So I really am excited about this conversation because Brian, like a lot of us, he was seeking his best version of himself and he'd take a huge risk to do it. I think he's an uncommon story. I think that he's lived an uncommon life, but I think there's ridiculous amounts of relatability that I think all of us are going to be able to glamp onto, write down in our journal, and apply to our daily lives. This story is one that I'm really excited to share. This is Brian Hamilton, who has been going for two as a football coach his whole career. And I don't know if he realizes it or not, but he's been doing that in his own life as well. I'm getting out of the way. This is Coach Brian Hamilton, the realities of coaching major college football.
Coach Brian Hamilton. Coach, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks so much, Yogi. Fired up.
Yeah, me too. I'm fired up as well. So I love diving right in, man. And this podcast, you've listened to a couple of them. We'll get into our relationship. But it's all about exploring the simple question of what does it mean to be human? And through, you know, 60-some-odd episodes now, and other conversations, I really think it's about seeking to be your best self. And I'm curious for you, because you're around young men all the time. We're going to get into your career here in a second. But if you were to answer the question of what does it mean to be human, what's your instant reaction to that type of question?
My reaction is to be human is to embrace and overcome challenge, to welcome it, to be comfortable in it, and to confront it head on.
I love that. Where do you think you got that from?
You know, I think growing up with, you know, with some difficult circumstances and, you know, and moving a whole lot and just constantly having to figure out whether I was going to confront struggle or confront obstacles or take an easier path. And I always have felt best about myself and felt best about what I'm doing when I was taking challenges head on, you know. And so I think that probably shapes a lot of who I am and continues to shape who I am and the decisions that I make today.
That's pretty rad, man. So I want to dive into how we met. My first memory of an interaction with you was at a Tony Franklin football clinic in Nashville, Tennessee. And I watched you present. And I was like, man, this dude is awesome. I didn't really know a lot about you other than, like, you look super familiar. I was like, God, how do I know this guy? And as I dove back into it, it was from, like, the Nike camps and being in the college and high school football landscape. And I ask you that because you have this life that's built around the game of football. You coached at Concord High School in California. You were then at UC Berkeley. We met again there when you joined the staff of Sonny Dykes and Tony Franklin. Now you're currently at Murray State University coaching the offensive line. Your profession is an interesting one. You know, here we are beginning of 2018. And I really believe as an analyst, man, your profession gets crazier by the second. I'm curious what it's like being in it.
It is almost as crazy from the outside as it is from the inside. I don't know that until you actually get involved in it, you know, like, as you alluded to, you know, 4 years ago, I was finishing up another high school football season and kind of inventorying gear. And, you know, you'd watch ESPN and watch these coaching moves and watch the coaching carousel and hear the salaries and all this. And it was all kind of unimaginable. And then, you know, 3 years later, you're in the middle of it. And, you know, really just trying to find the best way to navigate it and to be a great person and to stay who you are through all of it. And I think that that's the unique challenge. But I think the other part of that is the men that I've really grown to admire in this are definitely the ones who are true to themselves and, you know, are like authentic, you know, and who you see is who they are all the time. So that's within the craziness, the way to stay sane is simply to be yourself.
Okay. So why did you coach? Let's start there.
I got into coaching originally. I started off as an adaptive PE teacher or PE teacher for kids with special needs. And then I moved into my first job was actually as a girls PE coach. I taught aerobics and dance, and they had a need for a football coach, and I did that and loved it. And the reason why I kept doing it was because I enjoy watching kids learn. I enjoy watching them progress, and that's the most attentive classroom in the world is our football players. And so that's why I started, because it was just another opportunity to interact with those young men and to make a difference and to watch them get better at things and to watch them be excited about getting better at things.
All right. So you and I want to make sure I'm piecing this together right. So you basically kind of stumble into coaching. You're teaching adapted PE, working with young men and women with special needs. You're teaching aerobics and dance. You fall in love with the attentiveness of high school student athletes, and you're seeing this thing happen in college. You're seeing the craziness that you just described. Were you thinking, I want to go try that out? I just kind of need a break. You know, can I try to, you know, will one to happen?
No, it was kind of, for first year, then, you know, as a head coach, I just wanted to win a game as a high school head coach. And then you did that. And then you wanted to win a league title, and then you did that, and then you wanted to win a, you know, CIF championship, and then you did that, and then, you know, it just kind of progressed to, well, what's next? You know, what else is there to do? What else is there to achieve? And, you know, I had been at Concord for 12 years, and Coach Franklin offered an opportunity to do something different, and, you know, I was staring down the barrel of being 40, and there aren't many opportunities for adventure left at that phase, you know, from what I've heard. So I took him up on it, and you know, I'm very thankful that I did. And you know, it's a challenge, and it's a challenge that, you know, I look forward to meeting head on every day.
All right, so you go from the confines of high school football, winning a bunch, as you referenced, at a really high level, and a job that you know you feel comfortable with, to use your words, staring down the barrel and, okay, let's go jump on this college football thing, and you do it. When you got there, because a lot of people that do that, right? I mean, right now, as we look at some of the biggest names in major college football over the last couple of years, or even in history, they've all started coaching in high school for the most part, unless they were like a ridiculous NFL player. You know, a lot of them kind of get their break there and all of a sudden make the turn and the transition. When you got into major college football in the Pac-12, what was the feeling like? Did it become that drug of like, I got to stay competing at the highest of levels in major college football?
I don't know that it was that. I think the first drug was, you know, I mean, I bought tickets to go to Cal games. Like I took my sons, you know, and so now you're on the other side of it. And that was obviously just a tremendous rush. But after that, you know, the farther that I stepped away from what I was doing before, the more I realized that I loved it, but I wasn't necessarily always being challenged. And, you know, it was actually, you know, my wife was like, you're just so happy when you're working at this rate, when you're working at this pace, when you're challenging yourself every day. And I agreed, you know, I mean, I feel like every day, you know, I'm learning something and I'm trying to contribute something and I'm, and that's what it feels like to be fulfilled, to have a purpose, you know, and I had a great purpose at Concord High and I loved those kids and I loved the men that I worked with and loved the whole school. But you know, if you do anything for 12, 13 years, you're going to hopefully want some type of change or some type of new challenge. And I did.
Wow. Okay. So you get this new challenge, you fall in love with it. No longer are you taking your kids on road trips on BART. They're actually coming to the sideline in pregame and getting the full on experience. And then the business happens and
right,
all of a sudden coaches are out, there's major transition. And now here you are at a point of inflection. What and how did you process that as you were about to make your next step, now staring down the barrel of, you know, almost 45?
You know, I that's a great question. I talked to, you know, obviously talked to people that I trusted and loved, and, you know, obviously I had the opportunity to go back possibly to, you know, some area high school jobs. And I looked at some of those, and then Tony Franklin called me, and he really kind of put me to the test. And, you know, when I was a high school coach, one of the reasons that Tony and I formed a relationship, I think, was he was so intrigued with the fact that I had managed to cut out almost all special teams, you know, and, you know, that we always went for two and, you know, we never kicked a field goal and all those other things. And so when I was telling him, you know, what I was thinking and stuff, he said, you know, your life plan sounds like the opposite of every game plan I've ever heard you formulate. And that was just kind of a big putting a mirror in my face and forcing me to look at, you know, who I really was and who I really wanted to be. And we talked some more, and the more we talked, the more, you know, he let me know that if I went right back and went to something that I knew that I had while there were still opportunities out there, that I would probably not be the coach that I was before because I would have regret or resentment. And so, you know, him and I talked further and, you know, we explored other opportunities at the collegiate level. And that's how I ended up at Murray State.
Wow. Okay. Life plan, the opposite of every one of your game plans. So you went and obviously mirrored up going for two in every area of your professional life. And now here you are at Murray State, right? Which I've never been to Murray, Kentucky. I'm curious what it's like there.
Like San Francisco.
Yeah, it's probably pretty close. But I mean, another experience for you. I mean, you go from Concord, California, taking the BART to games, you know, working with the O-line in Cal, and now you're in Murray, Kentucky. Can you even believe where your trajectory has taken you?
No, man. Yeah, I can't. You know, not at all. And it's unbelievable how different it is. It, I mean, how every that, you know, when I got here, I went to the grocery store and I brought my own bags in like a diligent Californian. And then they looked at me like I was crazy. And then, you know, I went to pay for my gas before I pumped it. And they looked at me like I was crazy. And it's just so, there's just so many little cultural differences that arise every day. And, but it's awesome. And my kids and my family are having a wonderful experience doing something completely different than the Bay Area. And so, you know, we've really just embraced it as an adventure.
Wow. So let's talk about an adventure, because in high school, as you know, and anybody listening probably has an idea, you have to do a lot of different things, right? You're making sure kids get to class. You're making sure that their lives are okay. They're teenagers. They're going through puberty. It's up, down, and every way but sideways. Then you go to Cal, and now it's the number one public institution in the country. And it's got all these amazing student athletes from the East Coast, from California, and everywhere in between. Now you're in Murray, Kentucky, as you just referenced. Did you ever think that not only would you be coaching online, but you'd also be an ordained minister? Because you went absolutely viral, man, when all of a sudden it's practice. And I look up on ESPN.com, and I'm like, I know that name, and I know that face. And here you are talking to people about their vows. Like, how did that even come about?
All right. So the ordained minister is a misrepresentation. I don't know how that got out there. I'm a licensed wedding officiant.
My bad.
I know it's good. It's just so funny. You know, because I mean, there's obviously a stark difference, and, I had a buddy a couple years ago who asked me if I would perform the ceremony. Because as you referenced earlier, you know, I've done a bit of public speaking, and so I did that wedding, and so I'm headed out to meetings, and one of our defensive tackles, Bishop Woods, comes out of the training room, and he was all upset, and I asked him what was going on, and our athletic trainer is actually also a licensed wedding officiant and had told Bishop that he would marry him that day. And then backed out on him, and Bishop was all upset. And I said, look, man, if it means that much to you, I'll do it. And he got his girlfriend on the phone, and after practice, you know, I married him, and, you know, wrote up some vows and wrote up a quick ceremony, and away we went. And, you know, and then, like you said, 24 hours later, you know, I got a text saying that we were on ESPN SportsCenter AM. And then it just kind of took off from there, which was pretty cool.
That's amazing. I mean, that blows my mind. I mean, just to paint a picture for people listening, you went from a town of San Francisco's population is about 900,000. Now you're in a population of 19,000 in Murray, Kentucky, and marrying people.
Right.
But you still coach your football. So I want to ask some hard questions here. And I think it's important to paint a picture of the profession for people. I mean, a lot of fans, a lot of coaches that are listening to this are familiar with footballscoop.com. And I remember when I first found that, and all of a sudden Football Scoop is the area where people go to see what jobs are opening. You know, in the football coaching profession, it's kind of like the job board to a certain degree. I would like you to paint a picture for this, what it's like to be you in this profession. Because I talk to coaches all the time, and when I was younger, in my 20s in coaching college football, it was really fun that time of the year when all of a sudden it's December and openings are happening. People are getting hired. Rumor mill is going crazy. And then as I got older as a broadcaster, now I'm in my mid 30s and I've gotten to know people like you, gotten to know other coaches around the country that have families and have kids. And it's not that exciting anymore. You know, it seems as though there's at times it's probably frightening, if I'm being candid. And I'm sure there's, of course, the amped up element of being in the profession. But when you look at the people that are around you and your home, et cetera, it's probably not the easiest of things to process. So I'm curious what it's like to coach in a profession that's so inconsistent and unstable.
I think that's the biggest hurdle I know for me personally is the instability. I mean, you know, I was a tenured teacher. You know, I had a California's tension. You know, I knew exactly when I was going to receive a salary increase, you know, based on years of experience or, you know, credit hours acquired. And now, like you said, it's almost, I mean, this time of year, it's almost day by day or hour by hour. You know, first you're concerned about, after going through what happened at Cal, you know, you're concerned about your own job. And then you're concerned about the jobs of other people that you know. And then there's also the rush of, when a job comes up, you know, that you may or may not, that you feel like you may be qualified for, do you know anybody connected? Is there any, you know, is there a spider web of connections that will lead me to talking to somebody with some form of influence? So it can be months for guys at, you know, my level that aren't represented by agents, that aren't, you know, that don't have a ton of experience, that weren't GAs, you know, for ultra successful coaches, or, you know, it can be really nerve wracking and it can be disappointing and it can be, you can get your feelings hurt sometimes. But at the same time, you know, you love what you do. And like you mentioned, there are tremendous highs. And so you can't expect, you know, anything in life to just be tremendous highs, you know, that obviously the pendulum of emotion swings both ways.
So how do you get the word out about what you do? I mean, you look at what you've done, right? And you're around one of the top offenses in the country. You know, you are, in my eyes, a master of the screen game. You know, I always pepper you with questions about that. You know, this year your team, 25% fewer sacks for attempt than you'd had a year before when you weren't there. You've improved in the run game from the year before. Like, how do you get the word out? Like, as you referenced, you don't have an agent. Like, you got a PR firm. You know, how do guys make those moves? And I know a lot of it's by chance, but it's easy to say that. I mean, you're living it, and the guys you work with are living it. I'm just kind of curious how do you plot out a game plan for a guy who's been building uncharacteristic game plans for his entire career?
I think you just put great work out there and maintain connections with you know, people that you meet, even in passing. I think that you develop authentic relationships with people, and that you put your good work out there. And then I think that you leave it up to, you can't just leave it up to chance, but you know, at the same time, you put good work out there, you're ready at any moment. And you develop authentic relationships. You try to also have, you know, some type of social media platform where people can access who you are without meeting you first. So you take every step that you can. But for the most part, like you said, a lot of it is, do you know somebody that's moving? Do you know somebody that's affiliated with a job? Do you know somebody that has a need? You know, especially with the NCAA passing the 10th assistant, you know, that's going to create instantly, you know, 132 jobs in a very tight marketplace. So, you know, there's going to be movement. But the best thing you can do is be a great teacher and be a great communicator. And I think that, you know, the guys that have longevity are always both of those.
So let's talk about that, teacher and communicator. Tell me if you agree or disagree with this theory. I think that every coach, when they get older, they say it's all about teaching. It's all about the kids. I think that every young coach I've ever met, every GA who then has gone to be a position coach, I've never heard one say it's about the kids, because you're so young, right? You get in it and you're coaching because it's cool. You're going to games. You're an older player, basically. You're lucky if it's D1, you're Power 5 school, everything's paid for, you got a ton of swag, you get hooked up everywhere you go. I mean, it's a good gig because you're entering adulthood.
That's a good gig.
Right, that's a good gig, right? So if you play it out, you're your early 20s, then you get a break in your late 20s, and then maybe, you know, if you're going on a hot trajectory, you're in your early 30s, and then maybe you're interviewing for head jobs in your late 30s, you know, early 40s. But not once have you said it's about the kids, other than when you're either older or you've lost some games. I guess first, I want to pause there before my second point. Like, is that out of sorts? Is that out of left field, or do you think that it's kind of on it?
No, I think that's really honest. And I think that, you know, I think that young coaches connect to the kids, and I think that they do a great job. And I think a lot of them really do love the kids, but I think that knowing that it's about the kids can get lost, that it's about the kids' experience that can get lost. But I think that that's true of any field. You know, young financial analysts are, you know, just playing the market and the trends as fast and as hard as possible. Whereas you talk to guys in their 40s and 50s, and they want to make sure that their customers are taken care of for the rest of their lives, even if some money gets left on the table. I think that that's just, you know, the longer that you're on this planet, the more that you realize it's probably about other people. I don't think that mentality is unique to coaching. It's probably amplified in coaching because there's a scoreboard, you know, and you know if you lost.
Right.
And everybody
so here,
knows if you lost.
So here's my second point to that, is that when I look at a guy like you who started in high school and had the ability to be a head coach in high school and lead and develop young men on and off to where you really got to do it, right? Because nobody's making $7.5 million like Jimbo Fisher is coaching high school football, right? And if they are, it's the greatest job of all time. But my point is that – yes, that ain't happening. I say that because I wanted to have you on this podcast not because of where you coach college football, obviously. I wanted to have you on this conversation because I think you're one of those true teachers that got to see it at a young level of it being about the kids. And then you chose to take a run at it later in your career versus getting caught up in all the excitement and hype and, you know, extracurricular elements of why people coach. And when we coach, because it's a way we can stay connected to the game after our college careers end. You coach because you wanted to influence people in adapted physical education who had special needs. You wanted to teach, you know, young individuals that ran a 5.240 and played wide receiver how to catch a dig route. I mean, that to me is coaching. So I look at your scenario and I say, well, this guy's had a ton of success. Why aren't you the O-line coach at University of Pittsburgh, at University of Washington, at a huge school outside of you're not a huge name and you didn't play major college football in the NFL? I'm not sure. That's an awkward statement to make to you. I'm not asking you to respond if you don't feel comfortable doing it, but that's how I see it with you.
I just think, you know, I've gotten to this station in a different way. And sometimes, and I think most times, people are uncomfortable with different. I did not GA. I didn't, you know, I assisted, but I didn't GA and so therefore somehow it feels like, in being honest, that, you know, 12 years of coaching high school football is relegated to non-experiences compared to 2 years of GA. And for the most part, I can comprehend that. I can't necessarily understand it. You know, I mean, when you love the game enough to where you're lining fields for JV practices on Sunday morning instead of hanging out with your new family, I mean, you really love it and you're really committed to it. But I think that for the most part, that's a mentality that is still fringe. You know, I think for all the success of high school football coaches at the major college level, it's still the exception rather than the rule.
So, and again, I apologize if this is uncomfortable at all, but I'm curious. Like, you don't need this. You know, like you're good at it. Why do you stay in the game of college football when you know it's as inconsistent as it is? You know, is it a drive to get that major job? Is it that drive to be a head coach? Because that's what it is, I think, for a lot of people in it. And some others that I've talked to are like, well, what else am I going to do? I mean, I've got a customer-centered lifestyle. And these are guys that are in the NFL for major college football, and they've been making, you know, six plus figures now for 10, 15 years, and they're just accustomed to a certain way of living. So I get why they stay in it, but I want to ask you, because I think you represent the majority in the coaching profession. We read about the minority of the profession of coordinators and head coaches making a million plus, and it's front page news when it's rumored that a coordinator in the SEC might get let go after a year and he's making over $1 million. But it's not even back page news. And we're talking about the O-line coach at Murray State, who's a badass and a baller. So I'm just curious, because I talked to a lot of people that are like on a similar path of yours, of basically things not being handed to them, or not them not being in ideal circumstances or situations. And I guess I'm just curious why you still do it.
That's a great question. For me personally, there are 132 people on the planet that can coach the offensive line at the NCAA FBS level. I'd like to think that I'm as good as one of those 132. And I'd like the opportunity to prove that to myself, and also as a lesson to my kids. Not that there's anything common about what I did while I was at Concord High School, but you know, model that for them, that real earnest hard work and that real true uncommon belief gets you attain what you really want.
Wow. And what is it that you want? One of those 132 jobs, or do you think deep down that you could be one of those 132 head coaches?
Oh, right now, I'm one of the 132 O-line coaches. The longer I'm in college football, the, you know, head coaches, they don't get the time with the kids, you know, for the most part. I think sometimes they have to miss out on the good stuff to deal with the big stuff, and I'm still a pretty big fan of the good stuff.
I love that, man. All right, a couple more before I let you go. How do you feel about styles of coaching in terms of motivating this generation? You know, I can't tell you how many times I hear about – I mean, I do production meetings every Friday as I'm calling games for the Pac-12 Network, and I'd say 50% of the meetings you'll hear the following sentence at least once. And it might be from support staff members, it might be from actual coaches, but they'll say, man, kids have changed. I'm curious your reaction to that.
It's the same reaction that coaches and teachers had in the 80s and coaches and teachers had in the 60s and coaches and teachers had in the 40s. You know, kids have changed, and, you know, we've had a hand in changing them. You know, if you want to complain about the kids, you can take a look at recruiting. And I mean, it's, yeah, kids might have changed, but they still want to be a part of something. Football's still a really hard thing to do. You still have to sacrifice for it. I think the magic of being a football coach at any level nowadays is I can get a kid to put his cell phone down for 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can get them to meet, I can get them to lift, and I can get them to practice. I can get them to be involved in something that's, you know, bigger than themselves. So I still think that the spirit of young men is the same, and that they want challenge, and that they want some discipline, and that they want to know that you care. And I don't think that's all that different from when you or I played. You know, my favorite coaches were the ones I knew, you know, cared and you know, would give me a hard time and expect a little bit more out of me. But I just think that that's the easy excuse is, oh, well, the kids are different. No, they're not that different. They're not, you know, they're just younger, you know.
How do you think kids have changed and how they learn? You know, I'm obsessed with diving into like how the brain works, and I read a ton about it. I'm curious for somebody in a meeting room.
Oh man. Well, kids, that's a great question. Yeah, definitely kids have changed how they learn. I mean, the teachers are so much better in their everyday classrooms as far as how they're presenting you know, I mean, teaching thematically rather than chronologically and, you know, using what's the term with the curriculum crossover. I mean, these kids, you know, my sons, they learn a lot more of the why than just the how. And I think that we're seeing that with our athletes, you know, is they want to know the why, not just the how. Well, why does my first step go here? Not just this is where your first step goes. But I do think that that's a function of how, you know, they learn in school. And so their approach to knowledge might be a little bit different, but I think that that's a good thing. And I think that, you know, if you get those kids that want the understanding, one of my favorites was our left tackle at Cal. He had a million questions about the why, and really, once he had the why, he really, really blossomed. And then there are other players that never needed the why, that just wanted to know the how, and then did the how as violently as possible. But, you know, I mean, that's the art of teaching, is giving kids what they need in order to succeed. And they're not all going to learn the same.
I love that. I mean, what's so fascinating about coaching the offensive line, because O-lines are just different, right, as you know, and if listeners don't, it's just a different group of dudes, and it's five guys playing, you know, and having one job, which is basically to get hit first and open a lane for somebody to run or protect somebody to pass. And I think it's so fascinating when you sit in an O-line room, because there's anywhere from, you know, 15 to 22 guys in that room that you've got to get on the same page to understand how to teach, as you eloquently said, thematically versus chronologically, and teach the how, the why, to the how. I think that's fascinating. So my last question for you is, you are going to go to Charlotte here in a little bit, I'm assuming, for the coaches convention. And to paint a picture of the coaches convention, my understanding, and I haven't been there for a couple of years, but it's basically all the coaches at every level of major college football, and Division II, Division III, NAIA, JC, high school. I mean, it is just a boatload of testosterone and smart football people. And it's them teaching and sharing and meeting and connecting and rubbing elbows. And for people that are in your situation, how do you approach a basic four-day window of consistent relationships, job interviews, developmental elements of your professional career?
I think the way to do that is to treat everybody you meet like they have the USC logo on their chest. You know, everybody works hard. Everybody's proud to be there. You know, treat everybody that you meet with a tremendous amount of success. You know, if you looked past Chip Kelly when he had his New Hampshire pullover on, you're probably kicking yourself a few years later. there are tremendous stars still undiscovered all over the coaching landscape. And so, you know, just make sure that you treat everybody with respect, and that you're attentive, and that like any social situation, you listen more than you talk, and you contribute where you see that you can, and that you thank people for their time, and that if you feel like that you made a connection with somebody, that you feel like, hey, I think that we look at things the same way, whether that's offensively, whether that's the screen game, whether that's you know, running inside zone with a bang concept or playing long in it or whatever you're going to do, that you stay in touch with those people, and that you continue to learn from them when you're not at convention, and you continue to share information, and that, you know, you build a rapport.
What are you seeking, man?
More challenges, brother. Yeah, more challenges. And to embrace those challenges and more experiences like this, man. I mean, what a great thing to be able to sit and talk to you for this time and share, you know, what I believe is important and where I'm going and where I want to be. I mean, that's a gift. So I'm seeking challenges and gifts.
You know, I think there's a lot of people that when they hear that, they're going to say, you know, me too. And I ask you a follow-up to it, because I think you've crafted a way to seek those challenges and gifts without being stressed out in a stressful profession. How have you been able to do that, to those of you and to those that are listening that may be in a similar situation to you?
I'm very glad you asked. Again, I credit Tony Franklin when I was stressed, when I was panicked. He said, wake up and find 5 minutes in the morning and give thanks for 5 minutes. Just list the things that you're thankful for 5 minutes. And that's I get on the elliptical and I make sure that I start my day with 5 minutes of thanks. And I've got a lot to be thankful for. And I'm lucky enough to where I can embrace a challenge. There are a lot of guys out there that would not be prepared or fortified in order to take on a challenge. And I am. And so that starting the day with that mentality, man, has been a real game changer for me. And it's something that I'll do for the rest of my life, whether I'm coaching or, you know, mining Bitcoin or whatever wherever I go. That's that starting a day with 5 minutes of gratefulness from Coach Franklin has really, really been critical for me.
I ask everybody the same question on this podcast to close it out, man, and I'm curious your take on the word limits.
Limits. Limits are the walls that you build yourself to stay comfortable where you're at.
Said very well by the guy that smashed down those comfortable walls. That's awesome. Well, I made so many takeaways, man. I got a page of notes that I've just been taking as you've been talking. Brian, I think you represent a lot of people in this conversation, and I think you represent the purity and the purpose behind the coaching profession in major college football. And I can't wait. I can't wait to follow your journey. And I know the listeners will as well, and that will be tracking. So what's the best way for people to stay in touch with you or ask you to officiate their wedding, because you are a man of many talents?
Twitter is at capital O, capital L, Coach Ham, O-L Coach Ham. And I am really excited for the spring wedding season. I will customize vows. But yeah,
no, I love it.
Just follow me on Twitter. It's a cool mix of obviously, you know, some football stuff, but I also posted a picture of my 9-year-old and his 24-hour Lego project from Christmas. So
that's big. 24 hours of Legos. I need to follow that. I think we all do as well, man. This was a blast. Thank you for the time, man. I really appreciate it.
And there it is, Coach Brian Hamilton. I thought it was a really fun conversation. A lot of really unique elements that he talked about, from his background teaching adapted physical education to special needs students, to his desire to seek out, as he said so beautifully there at the end, challenges and gifts. I mean, come on, man. And then his 5 minutes a day where he gets to give thanks. Pretty impressive. Overall, what I think I will remember the most is when he talked about, well, my life plan was the opposite of my game plan, and he's going for it. I hope you enjoyed that one. Give Brian a follow and follow his journey, his path, and we're going to keep moving here. We got a lot of really fun guests here in Season 3 of the Life Without Limits podcast. I'm your host, Yogi Roth, and as we always end this podcast with a simple phrase, the only limits that we have in life are the ones we set ourselves. Hope you keep seeking. Peace.